Good evening, everybody. I'm Larry, sitting in for Yada tonight. James and I are going to be doing the show because Yada was just, you know, kind of behind the eight ball, had been doing a lot of work with the move and everything. And he asked us if we'd sit in. How are you tonight?
Good. I know that feeling. That was why I was out last week. Me and Patty spent all day doing yard work and landscaping, and I came in and passed out.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you know that's just what happens, and you know that's what the Shabbat's for too. You know, to get some rest. You know, I think sometimes we forget that, but I love the restful, slow days where I can just sit and ponder some Torah. I know I always feel a lot better by the time the day's over, and at the end of a long work week. I think it was brilliant stroke to set up a day we can just kind of do that, you know. And that's what makes us families. We actually get to relax a day. Isn't that something? Wow, that's a lot to ask, isn't it?
Yeah, that's such a burden, you know. The burden of the Sabbath.
It's astounding, you know. So many people, you know, we were having a kind of a discussion there, an unpopular truth. We had a fellow ask, how is it that you can really see the Torah as not being law? You know, when there were people that were actually stoned, you know, for this or that or the other thing. I don't see the Torah as law. I understand why those people were stoned. And it didn't have anything to do with breaking one rule. It had to do with the fact that, in my opinion, of course, it's not my opinion, it's Yahweh's words. He knew what the family was going to do. They were flatly going to walk away from him. Isn't that right? Isn't that what they were going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. He was trying to stop corruption from spreading.
Yeah, and we were supposed to observe what they did, right?
Yeah.
And you know, when Yahweh says, don't do this, and you do this, what ends up happening?
There's consequences.
Yeah, well, bad things happen, don't they?
Yep.
People die. You know, what do you think would be missing the mark in a greater way? Do you think if you fell off the wagon and had sex with a woman that you were not married to, or do you think that going to church every Sunday and putting a Christmas tree up in your household and bringing Easter eggs in would maybe be a bigger sin? Which would you say would be missing the mark in the biggest way?
Oh, definitely the religion, especially from Yahweh.
The latter. Yeah, the latter of the two. Yet we don't see him stoning anybody because they were religious. What he did in his words is he said, you're lousy, you're serpents, you're people I won't have anything to do with, you're people I can guarantee you your soul is going to be, you know, annihilated. Upon the completion of your temporal life, you know, but he doesn't really make a law about that, does he? I mean, it's kind of an overall thing you see everywhere. You know, when you have Yahweh calling these religious leaders serpents and snakes, and their path being, you know, broad. And it leads to death, and, you know, it's the plague of death. You really don't need somebody to write a law for you, do you, to know that you really don't want to have anything to do with them?
No, Yahweh presents it not as law, but as instruction, and with consequence. He tells you what the consequences of ignoring his instructions are.
Right,
not
and
law.
And somebody had asked, you know, how can you say they aren't commands? Well, you know, let's go back to the very start of this thing here. Because what Yahweh did was allow HaSatan to come into a garden. A garden where they were protected. It was a protected enclosure. It was the Garden of Eden. And yet, Chawa and Adam were duped by this being that's, you know, billions of years older than them and exponentially smarter than them in just about every way possible. Do you think Yahweh knew that they were going to be tricked when he allowed HaSatan to go in there?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think he could have kept HaSatan out of there? Easily.
Right.
Yeah, he could have kept him out of there, couldn't he? But he didn't. He didn't because he wanted to be chosen. You know, this. You know, once I started to understand where Yahweh was coming from, I began to get to know him. And it starts right off. Yeah, he wants to have a relationship. He said that he made Adam for the purposes of association and companionship. That was the purpose, not to be worshipped by Adam, not to run around and tell Adam what to do, but for the purposes of companionship. I mean, if you were out hunting, let's say you were out hunting a grizzly bear, you know, with a friend, and you were an expert and your friend wasn't, you know, you would give him instructions so he wouldn't get hurt. Wouldn't you?
Makes sense.
I mean, I would. You know, I mean, if you were doing something dangerous that you've done 1,000 times and you go, look, we can do this and it's not that difficult, but you do have to be careful because of this, 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 and this. You know, you would start telling your friend or your companion or your associate, you know, how to do it. That wouldn't be a command. It would be a help. And, you know, I see Yahweh out there trying to help us. I don't see him in any religious way. But I'll tell you this, if he commanded, if what they said in religious material was true, and I want you to think about this. I mean, CW's been through this. I mean, we've all been through this. I mean, could he really say, I command you to love me or even like me? I mean, could he? I mean, this is stupid, isn't it? I mean, once you realize that the reason that Chawan Adam even allowed what went on to go on so that they could make their poor choice, but they would have to make good choices to get back to him, and in order to do that, they would have had to have wanted to. I mean, isn't that true?
Yeah, they had to make a choice.
Right, to come back out of their own free will. So the minute we start getting into the concepts of Yahweh commanding, you know, I like the idea, Yahweh said, once you know, he's up in his cloud, you know, and he's watching you, you make this mistake, and he goes, JB, you know, the lightning bolt hits by, do that again, I'm telling you to go the other way, you know. What are you going to do? Yeah, I'm afraid. I'm going the other way. But yet fear isn't something that's advanced by Yahweh. We know that. We know it because he says all fear of him is a man-made notion learned by reciting nonsense, basically. So, you know, we're sitting here now in a situation. Do we think that a mitzvah is a command or it's an instruction?
And
people say that's a fine line, but it's not really a fine line with me. You know, I've seen people that abuse other people, and I'll tell you how they deal with them. They command them.
The difference is this. Have you ever bought a piece of furniture, and then you just kind of throw the instructions away and put it together? And you can get it together, but you got a lot of little extra parts left. You know, you might be able to make it work, but it's never going to be as good as it would be if you had followed those instructions.
Well, that's true.
If you choose not to follow the instructions, you're just not going to end up with a very good product.
That's absolutely true, but all those instructions out there are designed for one thing, and that's to get to know Yahweh, isn't it? To know him in a relational sense. And since he's not a religious deity, he's not commanding anything of me. I mean, he's made an offer, and out of my own free will, I can accept that offer or not. You know, there are loved ones in my life that I'll just take my kids as an example. You know, when I was raising my kids, I didn't know what I know today. You know, I taught them to be good, upstanding, conservative Americans. You know, as lightweight as that sounds, that's about how it was. You know, but I didn't teach them the truth because, you know, frankly, I didn't know the truth.
Yeah.
So now it turns, you know, but yeah, but now it turns out what I've taught them is, you know, it's of no use. Are they successful? Yeah, they're pretty successful. They really are. In a worldly way. But do they know anything important? Nope. Now, if I could take chains and wild horses and attach them to those kids and run them out of, you know, drag them out of Babylon, I would do it. But I can't.
Yeah.
Because they have to make that choice. You know, and you can't command somebody to respect you, to love you, to read the same things you read. They have to actually want to do that. Don't they?
You know, when Yahweh came to Abram, he didn't say, you know, Abram, I command you to leave Babylon. He said, it is my desire for you to leave Babylon, to leave your family, leave your country, and come where I will show you. It was God's
one of my favorite passages.
That, but it wasn't a commandment. He didn't say,
do
this or else.
12:1. Yeah, I got it. Yeah, exactly. Of your own volition, you know, right? I mean, you can't. He didn't say, "I command you," and threw lightning bolts at him, or had a giant asteroid hit his house or something. I mean, you know, he could have done any number of those things, couldn't he have?
Yeah. To me, the question isn't how can you not view him as commands. It's how can you, given the context of all of Scripture, the wording, the use of the different volitional tenses. Now, how could you look at any of that objectively and say that these are commands?
No, I don't think you can. Even what they call the Ten Commandments. Did Yahweh call them commandments?
Nope. He calls them
his words.
His
statements or words. Yeah. I mean, I just don't see how that can be done. I mean, and I'm only bringing this up because we were having a pretty lively discussion about it. And, you know, the person that was asking the question was saying, didn't people get, weren't other people, you know, stoned? Well, sure they were. But let me ask you something. You know, I mean, freedom of choice, but you're not free from the consequences of choice, Hani sent in to me. She's right. You know, freedom to choose. But free from the consequences of that choice? No, you don't get that.
No.
You know. But, you know, as I said here, and I think about Lot, let me ask you, do you have any kids, JP?
Not yet. Working on that.
Okay. Do you plan to have incest with any of them?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah, I was worrying about you for a second.
No.
Isn't that what Lot did? I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what Lot did.
Well, his daughter got him drunk and then had sex with him, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was not a serial pedophile or something. I'm aware of that. But, I mean, he did do that. And yet, I don't know anyone, you know, personally, who's done that. I only read about them in newspapers and they're in prisons and things like that. The point that I'm making is that I am pretty sure that Yahweh instructs us not to have sex with our own children. I mean, he doesn't flat out say that. Well, I think
that actually is.
Yeah, he does say that. And he's talking, don't be like the whatevers. And yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's in there. But yet Lot did that, didn't he? Drunk or not, he did it.
Yeah.
Now tell me, do you think that Lot was sent to hell for that because he broke a commandment? No. In fact, he was saved and that was the end of it. Yahweh knew Lot in a relational way, which is what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to follow a list of commandments. Matter of fact, because Yahweh is so smart, and brilliant and understands his creation better than they understand themselves, I'm pretty sure that Yahweh realizes how ridiculous all of us are. Would you say that's true?
Yeah. I mean, he knows humans for what we are.
I mean, when it gets right down to it, yeah, we're pretty weak, aren't we? I mean, we make mistakes all the time. We're absolutely stupid in most cases. Most humans make the poorest of all choices on a constant basis. Even the people that get put up as stars and they're known throughout the world and everybody loves them, I have never heard one of them bring up Yahweh yet. Have you?
No. Get a lot of Jesus stuff.
Yeah, whatever. They've never brought up. They bring up their religions all the time. You know, I mean, they made a hero out there. They made a hero Mohandas K. Gandhi, didn't they?
Yeah.
Now here's a guy that managed to get 2 million people killed while setting up an Islamic state. Boy, wow. What a great man. I think in the interim, he also left his wife for his weightlifting coach, some guy. You know? You hear quotes, you see quotes of Gandhi all over the place. I don't think he's the kind of guy I'd want to emulate at all.
No. Him and Mother Teresa are the two most overrated people of the last 100 years.
I'm glad you said that, because I've said the exact same thing, you know. You know, all these people that the world hold up as so great, they might have great PR behind them, you know, and they might have said a couple of well put together thoughts in front of crowds of people a time or two, but when you get right down to it, most of them are just your run of the mill dirtbag. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I haven't seen any of them that said anything important, ever. Nobody that the world regards as important have I ever heard say anything important. And yet they're held out as these great people. Well, Yahweh doesn't care about PR firms and spin and political correctness. He's not exactly tolerant of just anything. He's not tolerant at all. But he's very, very merciful to those who really want to get to know him. And that's our position, isn't it? Isn't that all we're really trying to do? Get to know Yahweh and the rest of the family and find our place in the family, that sort of thing. Isn't that what we're doing?
Yeah, that's the whole point of everything.
Do you feel commanded?
No, I feel driven to do it.
Okay, well, that's another issue.
But commanded, no.
Right.
That's what Yahweh wants.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know that's what Yahweh wants. But at the same time, do you feel like there's some list of laws that you got to get up and enumerate and go through every day? I mean, I surely don't.
Yeah, I don't have a list of what I can and can't do on the Sabbath. I just relax and enjoy myself on the Sabbath. I spend time with my family. I try and spend time in Yahweh's Word. I contemplate and think about His Word. I don't have a list of, I can't turn on a light switch. I better make sure I leave the lights on tonight because I won't be able to turn the switch on tomorrow. And I'll cook my meal before sundown on Friday. Then we'll just eat that on Saturday. And no. That's work. There's nothing to be gained from that.
Right. Isn't the whole concept of the Torah freedom?
Yeah, liberation. Reconciliation.
Right. I mean, we've been looking at what Dode had to say for, weeks now. And did he ever call the Torah law?
No.
That's right, he didn't. And he didn't do that for a reason. because Torah doesn't mean law. And that's why you find out that all these things that we're looking at, all the words we're looking at from a base word and the first time Yahweh used them standpoint, and we get accurate translations. Isn't that the point of what we share?
I mean, it's all about trying to come to a deeper understanding of Yahweh and His Word. It's a relationship. It's the same as any other relationship.
Yeah. Now, we went through Doe's words. Let's look at 1:19:45. Let's just look at it. He says, Wa Halak, and that means, and I choose to walk in it, and when he's saying it, he's speaking of the Torah, because that's what he's talking about in the 1:19, in its freedom. Freedom. That's Baha Chup Shah. That is liberty, free will. I choose to walk in its freedom. Now, can you imagine, because indeed I have sought after, inquired, found, and looked to your precepts and your directions, Pukudim. Okay? So, Dod calls the Torah freedom. Now, how could Dod call a list of laws freedom? I don't think that's at all possible.
Yeah, thank God we got those speeding laws. They just make me so free on the road.
Yeah, I break them every day. Every day. Yeah. Here we go. Yeah, Holly points out obeys the opposite of free will. That's exactly right. You know, if Yahweh's not looking for Rover, the dog. You know, he's looking for a serious relationship. This is one of the reasons. I mean, there's a number of reasons, but I think the two most important reasons that Yahweh hates being called Lord is one, Lord was Baal's title. I think that's a pretty important reason. And by pointing that out, he's saying people running around saying, Lord, they're not talking to me. You better start thinking about the stuff they've taught you, because if they've taught you I'm a Lord, they're liars. And then two, a Lord is somebody that is looking for people to obey their commands. Is that not true? I mean, can't we look at the overall thing and say, okay, two people were stoned for having an adulterous affair that the whole community saw and knew about. And so the governing body of men, by the way, decided that the punishment would be stoning them. You know, this is a real rare instance. They weren't out stoning people every day. But, you know, in this case they did, and they did it with Yahweh's blessing. Why do you suppose that would be? Because they broke the law? No, because the very spirit of the Torah they spit all over. You know, they went out and openly flaunted an adulterous affair. And so they didn't really care what Yahweh had to say about it. Plus, weren't these the very people that he had chosen to teach the rest of us how to live? Isn't that so?
They were spreading corruption.
Right.
They were chosen to show us be an example of how to live, and they were spreading corruption. So the one
right.
thing you have to cut the corruption out.
Yeah, and I can look at, you know, what great things has adultery done for, say, the world today? And I don't have to limit it to the United States. I mean, just the world as a whole. I mean, let's see. You've got orphan children, don't you? I mean, you've got bastards, basically. You got people who don't even know who their father is. Isn't that right?
Yeah, many.
You got people living off people in the form of welfare in this country, which is theft, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty anti-Torah, you know. stealing is not a real good thing as far as the Torah is concerned. So I'm sitting here and I'm looking at this stuff and I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, the truth of the matter is Yahweh doesn't like being called Lord, and he's not lording over people because he's not dishing out a bunch of commands in the form of laws. That's the religious God. He does all that. As a matter of fact, that's what Yahweh told the rabbis. He says, your Torah, and that's what he called it, and he said, your Torah, you know, has completely failed. It's destroyed the very nature of the covenant. And the covenant is based on a home. Every home has rules. But let me ask you, would you rather be in a home or in a neighborhood where people were married and they had kids and they had good relationships that were long and enduring? Or would you rather be in one where people were jumping in each other's house, jumping in and out of bed? Nobody was responsible for the kids that were left behind, you know, that were products of this wonderful, you know, relationship. Nobody took care of anything.
That's why I moved to the country and not to the city.
The point being that it's pretty obvious that that's wrong. Now, when Yahweh wrote his instructions, and he said, not to go out there and commit adultery. Did he say if you ever commit adultery, you've broken my command and you shall die? Is that in there anywhere?
Nope, doesn't say you're going to burn in hell for committing adultery.
Yeah, and it doesn't say to kill the person either, does it? I mean, isn't it something that's it's written in a fashion that it has to be ongoing? You know, if every time somebody made a mistake, they'd be stoned, I think there'd be nobody left, would there?
Yeah, the world would be pretty empty.
That's what I'm saying. Yahweh isn't stupid. You know, he doesn't expect a lot out of us, but he would like us to seriously consider his words. And when I consider his words, and I see that people are stoned, because, you know, they're in an adulterous relationship and they're the people that are supposed to be teaching, say, Larry and JB how to live, they just made a grievous error, haven't they? And what happens to people that don't listen to Yahweh's instructions? What happens to them?
Their souls die.
Yeah, they die. And that's exactly what remember the trick that Satan used? Halal ben Shikar, the arrogant son of the morning rising sun, with all his sun worship and all these religious groups, they all run around and they're sexually perfect. They've never sinned, you know those people.
They follow Paul's instructions.
Right. And they're following a sun god, talking about how pure as the driven snow they are, but yet isn't that what Satan did? He sat there and he told them, if you eat that fruit, you're not going to die. And he was telling the truth. Take a bite. You'll see. You won't die. Well, you wouldn't die a physical death at that moment, but your spirit would die.
Yeah, it
wouldn't isn't that true?
Yeah, well, and eventually you would die.
Right, although that even then, it probably isn't the case with Adam and Shawa. We know Adam for sure made it, because they chose to come back to him. If he was a guy...
away from him, but you can always turn back.
Right, but if Yahweh was a religious deity that said, okay, if you make one mistake, if you don't listen to my commands, you're dead. He never said that. Even when we're told not to kill, even when we're told not to commit adultery, that's written in a fashion that it would have to be an ongoing basis.
The imperfect.
Yeah, it's written in the imperfect call stem, so there you are. And that is it's written so that, okay, you're Mr. Don Juan. You're going out every night, every day, every other day, once a week, whatever, what have you. You pay no mind. You're committing adultery all over the place all the time. Is that person really family material? The answer to that is no. But could a guy make a mistake and realize that he's made a mistake and not continually roll around in that mistake and be okay? Well, yeah. Of course. A guy could even have incest with his daughters. I mean, that's got to be one of the most distasteful things in the world, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, Lot made it, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the idea that Torah means law and that if you break a law, you're as good as dead isn't true. Because if that were true, then Yahweh's words wouldn't be true. And not one aspect of Torah, from all the root words it comes from, means law. And since Dode said he found it, it made him free. Can you imagine a guy saying, "I say, hey, thanks for all your laws. They make me feel free."
It wouldn't sound right. It just inherently
well, it wouldn't
sounds
be
odd.
Right. He wouldn't be right in his head.
Yeah.
You know, the reason that Yahweh does, it's not one thing that leads me to believe Torah does not mean law. It's a litany of things. We just went over the whole Lord thing. How many times does Yahweh say he does not want to be called Lord? How many times does Yahweh say they're going to trick my people because of Baal and they're going to get rid of my name? Well, that was Lord Baal. And since that's what they call him now, Lord, I mean, he was not happy about that, was he?
No, no. He says it's one of the greatest crimes ever committed.
Right, right. In Malachi 1:6, he said, "A son highly values, esteems, and respects his father. A servant, his master." Now, if I'm a father, where's my honor and esteem? And if I'm a lord, where is my respect, says Yahweh of the spiritual regiment, to you, O clerics, who despise my name? Now, you can get any more clear, because there's this whole group of people in the world. When you start telling them what Lord means, then instead of saying Yahweh, have you ever had this happen? They go, "Well, my father." And I say, "Buddy, that's been tried before." They jump from father to Lord and Lord to father, you know, anything to get away from saying his name. But there's one thing for sure. Yahweh doesn't like the idea that people call him Lord. As a matter of fact, he calls it a curse. And he says, you know, they're going to be cursed with bowing. You know, most people, when it comes to religions, okay, when it comes to religions, don't most people kneel and put their head down and practice some kind of religious veneration?
Some form of
bow. Most religions you know of.
Every one of them. I can't think of one that doesn't.
Right. Yet Yahweh tells us what? He tells us not to imitate anything that the religious people do. I mean, that's a lot of things. So, he tells us that, you know, I want to meet with you guys. I want you to set these days aside. I want you to set the Shabbat aside. I want you to use my name. I even want you to bless in my name, you know. And I want you to love my name. And, you know, that's an instruction. That's not a command. I mean, if it was a command, you know, I mean, God's pretty powerful, right? I mean, he made the universe. I mean, he could enforce his command
if he wanted. If he really wanted us to follow commands, he would enforce them.
Yeah, he could turn you into a wind-up doll, you know. But yet at the same time, that's not what he's doing. These are instructions out here. And he lays out the truth to him. Look what he says. He says in Malachi 2:1-2, he says, "So then this condition to you, O clerics, if you don't listen and if you don't place it on your heart to give great esteem, honor, and respect to my name, says Yahweh of the spiritual regiment, I will send out in and among you all a curse. And I'm going to curse you with kneeling down. Now, and it goes on some more, but I'm going to curse you. Isn't that the signature mark of religion? I mean, you see these pictures of all these people. Aren't they kneeling? Aren't they all looking down? Aren't they kneeling? You know, that is the signature mark of religion. Buddhism.
I think there's one religion that doesn't have some form of bowing. There may be one out there, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, now, if I go over to Mizmor 2230, and we were talking about this one, I think, last week or week before, all of those who are descending to be pulverized into powdery dust as the rubbish of the earth, that's afar, that's just debris and ash, and the souls who do not keep alive shall kneel down prostrate. Wow. So all of them are kneeling. The people that are getting, beaten into debris and ash, the people whose souls are not going to live, they shall all kneel prostrate. Isn't that lovely? What does that tell you about Yahweh? What Yahweh thinks about kneeling? And isn't that what a Lord has you do?
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, they're going to be pulverized into powdery dust. Just debris, just ash. They're going to become a part of the earth. In other words, that consciousness, that nefesh, that soul, it isn't going to make it. And it's he depicts it as kneeling prostrate to the ground. So, you know, do I think that Yahweh has instructions? Yeah. Do I think that he thinks I'm going to perfectly walk through all of his instructions? No. I don't think he's stupid. I think anybody that with the idea that there's some perfect guy walking around out here needs to have, you know, their head examined. Because there isn't one. And at the same time, I don't believe he's commanded me to do anything. I do think throughout portions of my life, my eyes were really opened up to what's really going on in this world. And then I started reading Yahweh's words and started seriously considering those words, just as you did, JB. What did you find? He was basically describing everything you had been seeing. Wasn't he?
Yeah. And he made sense.
Yeah. And once you get rid of the concept of obeying Yahweh as though you're a command or an attack dog or something like that, and you start looking at Yahweh for who he is, what his offer is, then you look at him in a completely different light. You know, when I first found out that we had all been lied to, I'd been lied to, everybody I knew had been lied to, I still didn't realize, even then, I didn't realize right off the bat that Yahweh was not a religious deity, did you?
I kind of always never would have accepted a religious deity, but I came from an agnostic point of view, so the religious God was always kind of very put off to me.
No, I mean, it was shortly after I found the words now, I began to understand he's not a religious deity. I mean, because he says so.
Yeah.
You know, I got that. He says it, I believe him. And then I started looking at everything kind of opened up from there. Okay, so now we're talking about reality. We're no longer in, you know, a delusional land of religion. Because religion really is delusional. I mean, there's so many aspects of it that are delusional that, you know, we could go on probably for 2 months talking, you know, 100 miles an hour I think that the biggest one that gets me is that he's omnipresent. Sure, he's omnipresent. That's why he has messengers. Yeah, right? I mean, just simple things. But, I mean, you know, they are the major poles in religion, aren't they? I mean, everybody thinks that God is watching them every moment. Well, that's impossible. You know, if he wanted to watch you, could he? Sure, I'm sure he could. Is he going to spend all his time watching Larry Hendricks or JB? He's probably got more important things to do.
Yeah.
No. Now, does he have a malak maybe assigned to us, watching us to, you know, help us? Probably does. You know? You know, you know, we're part of the flock, you know, and they have jobs too. So, yeah, do I think that Yahweh can know anything he wants to about me? Yeah, sure. No doubt about it. If he wanted to watch me 24/7, he'd probably be a pretty boring guy.
Wow.
He could do it.
Yeah.
You know,
my life's been stalled.
Yeah, I mean, and these are just concepts from knowing, you know, when you begin to really seriously look at his words and then lose the traditions behind them, you know, you come to a point of understanding. And the point of understanding that I've come to is that I don't believe for a moment that Yahweh is a religious deity. I don't think he lords over me. I don't think his instructions are laws, and I don't think that he commands anything at all. Other than, you know, Malak, when he tells him what to do. But I think that he allows total free will. And if he didn't, I'd like to know what's going on when somebody goes out and rapes a child or something like that. What kind of command was that? Yahweh? Yeah. Not a very good one. Or let's go start a war and get 1 million people killed or 60 million people killed. Let's come up with a philosophy like, say, communism, and let's institute that over in China and watch 60 million people get killed. No, I think men did that out of free will, don't you? I mean, I don't think they were commanded to do that.
Yeah, that was people being bad. It's where people
exercise free will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's these are the concepts that people have a hard time, you know, getting through their head. And the only reason they have a hard time getting these kinds of concepts through their head is because they've been lied to for so long. Because religious tradition pretty much says the opposite.
The exact opposite.
Yeah, you know, you got, you got some people that get so goofy, they think that the devil's on one shoulder tugging and there's this angel on the other side. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. And they actually think that there's this fight over their soul. And the truth of the matter is, the only person that you're going to have a fight with when it comes down to your soul is yourself. Because you get to make all the choices. And you're going to make good choices or you're going to make bad choices. But I do commandments isn't exactly the way I see it. And I'm going to go back to the Mizmor 119:166. I confidently and totally expect La Yahshua to be saved, Yahweh. For I act upon the terms and conditions of your relationship, your mitzvah. He didn't say I act upon your commandments there. You know, if I was commanded to do something and I had to obey those commands, I wouldn't be acting upon anything. I would just be thoughtlessly doing commands, wouldn't I?
Yeah. And where's the fun in that?
where's the freedom in that? Even, you know? I mean, and so those are the things, you know, those are the things that lead me to believe that mitzvah does not mean command. You know, in religious material, you're going to see asah as do and mitzvah as commands, you know. So if the religious translations were correct, instead of what I just read, Dod would have been saying, I do commandments. I do commandments. I do commandments. That's empty. Whoa! You know, help! I do commandments. You know, and it's laughable, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole point of this song is Dod explaining how to engage in a relationship of the covenant. And doing commandments and you know, getting rid of the concept of free will isn't part of that. You know, it just isn't. I mean, and I don't think, you know, if somebody said for me, for all eternity, I want a bunch of people under you that you command to obey you, I don't even think that would be a very fun existence. I mean, at some point, you know, wouldn't you yada? Wouldn't you want to know somebody in a relational sense instead of as a servant or somebody you slapped around? Right?
That sounds like a miserable life to me. I don't like responsibility at all, really.
Yeah, I'm saying even if you're the one in charge. You go to the next verse, he says, you know, your Ida, your enduring testimony and restoring witness, cares for and watches over my soul because I have genuinely loved them very much. You know, if you start thinking about Yahweh's instructions, they actually come out pretty good to where you don't even, if you're looking at them from a command standpoint, I think you're in deep trouble. I just don't see where you would see that as a lot of fun. I think you would be full of fear, you know, that you might make a mistake. Right? I mean, I've even had people tell me that, you know, when they're new to the words and they come, they're going, oh, I feel so like I'm going to make a mistake, during the mikra of Pesach and Matzah and Bikurim. Well, you know what? The mistake that we make is thinking we can even perfectly do Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, because we really can't today. Can we?
No. No, we don't have 90% of what we would need.
Right. I mean, I'd have to be some billionaire. I'd have to have people putting everything together, people with understanding really far beyond mine. You know, if I was going to walk out and have, you know, seven lambs and, you know, two bulls, and, you know, but we can understand what they mean, can't we?
Exactly.
You know, and that's my point to this. You know, coming to an understanding, you know, C.W. calls himself yada, and that just means to know in a relational sense. That's what it means. And if we can get to know in a relational sense what it is that Yahweh is trying to get across to us and how he wants us to approach him and how he even wants us to view him, how to meet with him and how to get to know him, these are the things that we should consider. And I don't even see how you could begin to consider looking at it, you know, in that view, if you were viewing all the things he said as a bunch of laws. Could you?
I don't think it's possible.
I don't either. And that's why, and again, I don't want to fight with anybody. I don't want to sidestep issues because he said, you know, don't sidestep the issues. I want a straight answer for this. Well, I don't believe mitzvah means command. And if mitzvah does mean command, then here's what Dod would have been saying. I confidently and totally expect to be saved, Yahweh, for I act upon your commands. That's kind of a religious viewpoint.
Yeah.
You know, even though I know mitzvahs, you know, they're authoritative directions. They are authoritative. You know, but he isn't commanding anything. I just don't see it that way. And I don't see that Dode would have called the Torah freedom if it was just a bunch of laws. I think once you begin to understand the Torah, you understand that those people who have responded to the Torah the way Yahweh wanted us to, or wanted them to, and they responded, they're free. They're free from this world. They're free from this body. Go ahead.
If you think about it, a law, by definition, is restricting. There is
right.
No law that, it's restricting on one party or another. Take the Constitution. Yeah, the freedom of speech is a restriction on the government. It restricts freedom. It restricts
right.
their freedom by guaranteeing ours, but every law is a restriction.
Good luck with that, by
Therefore,
the way.
Therefore, a law cannot be freeing. A law, by definition, is not freeing.
Yeah, and yet Torah means really instructions, you know, more than anything,
yeah.
I think. And I'm
free.
Yeah, instructions. Let me ask you, in teachings and directions, instructions, Torah. Now, if I said to you, I gave you a law and said, here's the law, this is what you do when this happens, would you see that as a teaching, or would you see that as a more of a hindrance? I just don't see the two as being compatible.
No, they're not.
You know, I think teaching and guidance and direction is almost the antithesis of law. And that's why to call something law, you know, just how many people were actually stoned in the Torah? Has anyone ever counted? Does anybody know?
It wasn't many. Very small handful.
Right. You know, and so if somebody gives you a law, what do you learn from it? Well, you either learn do it or don't do it, but I mean, beyond that, what do you really learn? You don't really learn anything, but I got to tell you, the Torah has, you know, we already know it has billions of things to teach. We're barely scratching the surface after years of doing this. And I was watching a... this week I was watching where they were taking Hebrew numerical values of words. And believe it or not, the word that meant rainbow, and I'm gonna write some of these down so we can get into them, but the word that meant rainbow actually told us how fast light was moving.
Hmm.
You know, the word that meant gold gave us the atomic weight of gold. Same with aluminum. Same with brass. I mean, this is astounding stuff. These are what they call Torah codes, as they call them. There's this professor that's just really off into them. And they're astounding. They're astounding. I mean, there's just no question that this wasn't accidentally done. You know. There's so much to know in the Torah and so much teaching that to call them laws when he's pointing things out, you know, this is good, do this, don't do this. And I got to tell you, the biggest don'ts I ever see are don't be attaching me to any religion. Don't call me a Lord. And don't do these things. And you know, I want to be known on a first-name basis, and I want to be welcomed as an individual. You know, when I read, and that's one of my favorite passages, when Yahweh says he wants to be welcomed, greeted as an individual, I right there went, wow, so all religion is wrong. You know, I got to that fairly early. You know, it becomes a thing where if you want to debate commandment versus directions, instructions, I think it's worth having that debate, because I just don't. If somebody gives you free will from that point on, how can they be commanding you to do anything?
They can't.
Right. I mean, it's as simple as that to me. It's not a commandment. If there were a tribe of people, and that tribe of people said, okay, we have decided to take it upon ourselves to follow your instructions to the nth degree, and you all say you agree, and then two or three people out of, you know, thousands stop doing it and start doing the opposite, would you be within your rights to get rid of that person? I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And so, you see, you know, when I look at Torah, I don't see it as law. When I look at mitzvah, I just don't see it as a command. Everything's about free will. You can't command anybody and lay down the law once you've offered free will. Free will's free will. And that's why the world is in the shape it's in today. It isn't because people followed Yahweh's instructions. It's because they followed their free will and they chose poorly. And that's an option we have. And if we're given that option, well, we're given that option.
We have to also that option.
I mean, if somebody said to you, I command you to love me, or forget love, just I command you to have a deep, abiding relationship with me, how would that go with you? I mean, somebody just walked up out of nowhere and said that. I would think they were insane.
They'd be like, who the hell are you?
I'd be like, say what? Really? And, you know, since we know that Yahweh's not a topsy-turvy kind of guy, he really made Adam for the purposes of relationship. He wants a real relationship. And I think part of a relationship is seeing, even if it's a teacher-student relationship, it's seeing your student grow. Or if it's a father-child relationship, it's seeing your child grow. Isn't that true? I mean, really. And he is the teacher. And he is the father. And so what Yah was interested in is us getting into the relationship. It's almost when somebody calls his mitzvah commands or calls his Torah law, it's akin to saying that Yah was going to, quote, save me. Now, when you think of being empowered and enriched, I mean, you think about being amplified into a being of pure energy yourself, you know, on a whole nother level and a whole nother plane. When you think about that, doesn't that kind of leave being saved in the dust?
Yeah.
I mean, that becomes an afterthought. It becomes almost something not worth even thinking about. I mean, I don't like the idea of going to the abyss. Okay. So I certainly don't want to purposely deceive or mislead anybody, because that's what's going to happen to those people. And I don't much like the idea of my consciousness just fading out and becoming nothing.
Yeah,
but I do like the idea. Yeah, but I of course, but I do like the idea of becoming being of infinitely more knowledge and power and speed and feeling and thought and able to do things that I probably can't even dream about today. In fact, I love that idea. You know, that was part of the benefits. Yeah, even Dode was saying, you know, getting into the benefits side of it ain't a bad deal either. You know. And I like the idea of being able to walk up to Yahweh and call him by name and, you know, sit down and have a glass of wine with him, eat a steak dinner with him, listen to him, laugh with him. Right? I love these things. These are phenomenal ideas. These are bigger than anything that's ever happened to any of us. Isn't that true?
Yeah. That's what I look forward to.
Yeah, I mean these are just touching the surface. Like I said, I don't even believe that we can begin to understand how incredible it will be. You know, I think there are so many dimensions we're going to get into that we probably haven't, we haven't even considered. Our minds are not big enough, probably. You understand what I'm saying here?
Oh, yeah.
And that's how I look at... Well, go ahead. Go ahead, JB.
I was just saying that's the whole idea of being amplified, you know, being empowered through Shavuah.
Right. But yet, some of these things are so fantastical. I mean, if you think about it, you know, Yad has talked about it. You know, you go from a two-dimensional object, like a piece of paper, to a human being, which is a three-dimensional object. You know, now there's a pretty big difference between that piece of paper that's sitting on your desk and yourself. I mean, that's a infinite difference. Yeah, it's infinitely different. Yeah, words can't describe how different they are. I mean, you can say two-dimension and three-dimension, but if that, you know, one dimension and jump, that you jump one dimension makes all that difference. Now imagine going to four or five or six or seven. You see my point here?
Yeah.
You know, that paper can't understand me. I can sure use that paper. But boy, if I went to the fourth, fifth, or sixth, or something like that, I mean, whoa! You know, being saved is such a bare minimum point at that point, you've forgotten about it. And that's why I say that, you know, if we start to look at the Torah as something that's just a list of laws, you know, let me tell you, I've had debates with people that believe that. They really do. Rabbinic Jews. And you know, they can't even see Yahusha. They can't even see Yahusha in the Tanakh. Isn't that astounding? I mean, that's a lot of words you got to walk over.
When you choose to be blind.
Yeah, but they're just going out there. They're just going out there to have a religious celebration. You know, I mean, they've forgotten what they matter of fact, they never even knew what it was for. They don't grasp the concept that all these things are put there for our understanding. You know, as an example, you know, even going out on the ark and, you know, once it stops raining. You know, a week later, you understand what I'm saying. You're into 49 days.
Yeah.
You know, and right there, you've just watched, you know, Moed Mikra play out. You read it all those times, and you didn't even know it. Well, imagine if you weren't even looking for understanding. And I say that people that are following, obeying commands are not really looking for understanding.
I don't have any interest in understanding.
Right. They're not understanding the whole point of this, which is what it's all about. You know, it's not about, hey, Spot, here's the ball. Go get it, Spot. Bring it back. Okay. You know, it's so about the relationship.
Most people aren't even interested in understanding. They want to be told what to do. That's why religion flourishes. People want to be told, you know, do this, do that, don't do this, and then they'll go to heaven. Yeah, they want a nice little list of do's and don'ts that they can follow, and they're happy. Yeah, Yah's not interested in that because, like you said, there's nothing to learn from do's and don'ts. There's nothing to learn from that list. He wants us to learn. He wants us to engage and relate with him. And you can't do that from do's and don'ts.
Well, it'd be kind of like, too, let's say, JB, you're the master in charge. Okay? And
okay.
Everybody says, JB came in, everybody stand up. And everybody stands up. And then you look at them and you nod your head. And then, okay, you can all be seated. You know, and this goes on. You know, this list of commands and obeys and all this. Or you could have been sitting out in the crowd and saying, okay, we're going to have this meeting. And by the way, look, I brought food for everybody. Let's enjoy. Let's talk about this while we eat. Now, which meeting of Master JB's would you want to be in?
The one where we're all sitting down just talking.
Yeah, yeah. Funny. And you'd probably get to know each other that way, too, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd get to know them. They'd get to know me. We'd all have a good time.
Yeah. You know, and in other words, you can have a meeting, and there's two different ways to have that meeting. Or maybe there's 10 different ways to have that meeting. Doesn't matter. Everything gets put in a different light by the way you view it. And I don't... I'm not trying to dance around Torah, not meaning law. I'm not dancing. I'm saying it doesn't mean law. And I say that there's a big difference between JB saying, Larry, I want you to go out there and teach these people how to be, and I want you to really consider this stuff because they're going to be following your step. And before long, my step becomes lazy and I don't care and I'm, you know, all this. And you go, wow, thanks. You really blew it, pal. You know, and there's a big difference between the guys showing everybody how to be and the guys watching that are trying to be like that. And I'm saying that Yahweh knew full well what was going to happen. And I don't think that Yahweh expects me to obey commands. I think he expects me to observe the Torah. And Hani says it's about your perspective. Perspective is everything. And so that's how I perceive it. I mean, that's it. You know, Yahweh, Dode talks about, in the 119th, Yahweh's means to resolve disputes and achieve justice. Now, if everything I did was on the scale of weights and measures, he wouldn't have to resolve disputes or achieve justice through his Moed Mikra, because Larry could do it all by himself. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
My soul is literally and continually restored and kept alive by choice, and it elects to incessantly reflect and unremittingly experience your brilliant light, because your means to resolve disputes and achieve justice, the Mishpat, genuinely and continually assist me. Oh, so even Dode needed assistance in that area. I know I do. I'll bet Dode didn't obey all those commands.
I know for a fact he didn't.
Well, yeah, he just says so right here. He says, I had wandered about, and I had been misled, and I'd gone astray like a lost sheep in the manner of a lamb awaiting slaughter. And then that's how the world is. The world's waiting to be slaughtered. Its life wasted and nearly squandered, soon to be destroyed and ceasing to exist. Ka Abad Sa. So I want you to seek to be responsible for and do what is required on behalf of Abed, your servant, for indeed, because I have not overlooked, lost sight of the significance of, or failed to respond properly to your enduring testimony and restoring witness, Eduth. And that's the Mizmor, that's the song, and that's 119-169 through 176. Those Mishpat are those seven called out assemblies that start in the spring at Pesach and end with Sukkah in the seventh month. And as I look at that, I say, thank you for putting that down, Dode, because Dode, as well as he knew Yahweh, as well as he knew the Torah, he needed somebody to achieve justice for him. He couldn't do it. He couldn't obey those commands hard enough. Even he needed help. So I think JB and Larry need a lot of help. What do you think?
Yeah.
Why do you suppose that these mitzvah were put there? I'm going to give you my opinion. I think it's because everybody needed some help because nobody's as pure as the driven snow. That's what I think. What do you think?
I would concur.
You know, if Yahweh was trying to put me in a position where I had to obey commands, I would be a nervous wreck. I really would.
Yeah, I would not be as relaxed, happy as I am.
I don't think anybody can perfectly obey the Torah. And I think people that run around claiming they obey everything in the Torah are fools setting themselves up. Because we are, you know, no matter what a PR firm can do for Mohandas K. Gandhi, let me tell you, Yahweh's going to know better. And so if we rely on him, and that's really the purpose of the Torah, isn't it? It's getting to know him by relying on him. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
What other purpose does the Torah serve? To put you in servitude? To make you bow down like a whipped puppy? I mean, we already saw Yahweh doesn't think too much of bowing down. He calls it a curse, and he says the people doing that, they're all, you know, they're going to be pounded into dust. Isn't that what he said?
Yeah.
Well, what's going on then? You know, we're here to observe the Torah. Matter of fact, you know, I don't like getting into any of the witness writings. I'm not going to get into it too much other than to say, isn't that, weren't they all over Yahusha's case because they didn't think he was obeying the Torah?
Yeah, that was what the Pharisees thought, at least.
Right. They got him. He wasn't obeying. He was 100% Torah observant, according to Yahweh. 100%. Matter of fact, he said to him, this is what he said, and this is in Malachi again. He says, "For the lips of the clerics should carefully observe and consider knowledge and understanding. Search the Torah from his mouth." Because indeed, he's Yahweh's messenger. So all these experts that told him that he wasn't obeying the commands in the Torah, Yahweh said exactly the opposite. Said, what are you talking about? The Torah flows from his lips. You should be listening to him. You ought to search the Torah for him. You know, of course, he was telling them, you know, if you can't find him in the Torah, you're dead anyway. And that's what he's saying. Search the Torah from his mouth. As for yourselves, you've turned away from the way, causing many to stumble by your instructions and teachings. Torah. You corrupt and invalidate the familial covenant relationship, says Yahweh, of the assembled helpful envoys. So the people that are turning Torah into law, and that, those were the rabbis. At that time, I don't think the clerics. Those people that were taking what was designed to create a relationship and turning it into a list of laws to do and don't do, those were the people that trashed the Torah. He says, relationally, you are not observing my way and are not lifting up my presence in the Torah. My presence in the Torah. Now, that'd be Yahusha, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so these experts had gotten, and these are religious experts, they knew the laws inside out, and you know, that's how they viewed the Torah as law. These experts couldn't even find Yahusha in the Torah anymore. They were so brilliant. You know, they were the disease, and the Torah is the cure. Yet they viewed the Torah as law, didn't they?
Yeah.
Pretty sure. And yet, you know, today, I mean, we have people saying, okay, so what's the difference between instructions and law? Well, you know, a law is something you either follow or you die or get punished. Yahweh looks over a lot of the things we do. I think he looks right past many things we do. Matter of fact, when we come in his presence, we're going to be perfect. But I'll ask, you know, anybody listening, anybody in the chat room, JB, and this goes for me too, could any of us say, I've lived a perfect life? I can't. I can't even come close to saying that.
Sure as hell can't say that.
Yeah. So why would we put ourselves in a position, you know, to say that these are laws, and if we don't follow these laws and that have been commanded, we're going to die? Because I'm going to tell you something. If that's how you feel about it, you're already dead. I mean, if you want to meet him on that plane, because that's a very religious plane, you're going to lose. Yahweh doesn't hold religion in very high esteem. I mean, not at all. And, I want to get into how, and this is a note I've put out a few times, but I think it's very important. If we're going to wonder if Torah means law, and if it does, then Dode was saying, I absolutely love your laws because they make me feel so free. And I don't think that's what Dode was saying. I think he said Torah. And
sure
here it is. Yeah, you know he did because you've seen it. Yeah, but if Torah meant anything other than directions and teachings and instructions, we would all be dead because we've all broken the law. Haven't we? I mean, I have many, many, many times.
It's law. I've broken it many times.
Yeah. You know, throughout Yahweh's words, and JB, you're a wordsmith in this way. You know, take a word like coal as an example. You know, K-O-L. It can mean several things, can't it?
Yeah, it's actually more. Coal is pretty limited. It pretty much means all.
Yeah, but it also means voice or sound. Sure it does.
Oh, call with a yes.
K-O-L.
I'm thinking of
yeah.
Call as in the word for all, but yeah, no, call, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's like that. So when you're doing translations, you really have to consider a word, you know, where it's falling, you know, the context of the word. I mean, you know, if they were saying, everyone got on the boat and it said coal, you could understand that. You wouldn't say voice got on the ball or sound got on the ball. You go, okay, everyone. Right? I mean, if you're doing your translations. Because you considered it. You didn't just throw a dart at a board and say, you know.
Examine the context, the way it's used, you know, any modifiers that might be attached to it.
Yeah. And so, what happens in religious translations that you've seen? I mean, you do a lot of translating.
They completely ignore most of the time what words mean and just make up a story that fits their agenda.
Yeah, they do that, and then they use what? They usually use the most recent use of the word. They don't go to the original base of the word or how Yahweh originally used it. And then don't even consider
the situation. However, the Latin decided to translate it, or the Greek decided to translate
that's
it.
That's the low road.
Well, other people, that's kind of a cop-out. Well, this was translated this way by other people, so I want to assume they know what they're doing, and I'm going to go with what they went with. Well, don't blame me. That's how they did it.
Right. Yeah. And it's also a lazy way. It's a thoughtless way to do it. And that brings us to how Yahweh's nature has changed. And when you change Yahweh's nature, knowing these are Yahweh's words, there are certain expectations that change with it. You know, I mean, again, this is one of my favorite passages. I've read it before. I'm going to read it again. It's in Yashaya 29:12-13. Then Yahweh said, for so much as these people, and he's talking about religious leaders and political leaders, they approach me with their mouths and with their lip service. They have removed their hearts from me for their yira. Now, yira can mean fear or it can mean respect. Right? I mean, it can mean one or the other. It says, their fear towards me exists because it is taught out of man-made traditions learned by rote. Now, yira can mean respect or it can mean fear. Now, it wouldn't make any sense for Yahweh to say their respect towards me exists because it's taught out of man-made traditions learned by rote. Because what he's saying is whatever is being taught here isn't true. Right?
Yeah.
He says, so clearly he's saying their fear of me shouldn't exist. He's not saying their respect of me shouldn't exist. I think Yahweh wants to be respected. He just doesn't want to be feared. Because if you get into fear, then you get into obey and commands and lording over people. You know, you have the low road. You have religion again. You know, there's two roads here. We can take the high road or the low road. I mean, these are choices we make in our lives. And they're also choices people make when they share Yahweh's words. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
So if you go, well, I'm just going to take Yirah, and I'm going to throw it at a dart at a board, and if it hits the right side of the board, I'm going to put fear or respect. And if it hits the left side of the board, you know, I'm going to put respect or fear. So I'm either going to, fear or respect is just going to be based on how I throw this dart. But things have to be in context. We know that Yahweh is.
They might have actually got some of them right. They like go out of their way to use the law.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying,
it was random.
Right.
Random would have given some chance to it.
Good point. Because we know they took the low road every time. Now, let's look and see where fear comes from. I mean, according to Yahweh, where he says fear comes from. Besides this reciting these fearful passages all the time. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and terror. He exalted himself in Yisrael, but with the Lord Baal, and was wrong, offensive, trespassing where he didn't belong, and he died. Now, he made a choice. Ephraim decided that he was going to scare people with Lord Baal. Sounds religious to me. How about you?
Yeah.
But yet, that's what makes religions tick, you know, because all things relational are changed to create fear. Now, I never went to translation school. You know, I really never did. JB, did you?
No.
Are you a theologian? I mean, did you get a degree in theology or anything like that?
Far from it.
Okay. Well, then why is it I would trust your translations over probably the best 10 translators at the King James Version book named after the sun goddess Biblia? Why do you think that would be?
I wouldn't ask you to.
No, I know you wouldn't ask me to. But if JB went over a piece of paper for a couple of days and said, this is what I think, and then I went and read that KJV, who do you think would probably be closer to the truth? I mean, you don't have to brag.
I think I'd be better than the KJV.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not
that's
bragging.
A pretty low target.
Yeah, this is small praise, okay? But it is what it is. You know, now, if I said to you, I read Yashayu 29:12-13, and it said, then Yahweh said, for as much as these people approach me with their mouths and their lips, they've removed their hearts from me, for their fear towards me exists because it is taught out of man-made traditions learned by rote. And then I said, I want you to go over there and work on this psalm, and here's what I think it says. The beginning of all knowledge is the fear of the Lord. Do you think you might straighten me out at that point, say, hey, Larry, you know, you just showed me Yashayah 29:12-13, where Yahweh says he doesn't want to be associated with fear.
Yeah.
I mean, would you not consider that?
Internal contradictory is one of the signs that you can't trust the author.
Yeah. Yeah, so do you think there's one chance in hell that Yahweh was saying their respect towards me exists because it is taught of man-made traditions learned by rote? Okay. So then if I threw a psalm at you that said the beginning of all knowledge is the fear of the Lord.
You know, you hear the term God-fearing person all the time. You never hear the term God-respecting person.
Yeah, or somebody that relationally understands God, you never hear that. I mean, which is what we're going for here, you know. Now, we saw where the fear came from, and it was that word year again, you know, and it came from, Baal. You know, Ephraim was stirring up the people. He was scaring them to death. And he was using Baal to do it. He wasn't using Yahweh to do it. He was using Baal. And this is how things work. And this is how Shamar, observe, understand, know and understand, gets turned to obey. You get over here, you sit down, you take your position, you hold your stick this way, begin eating now, you know. Okay, I'm obeying. I'm like a little wind-up. Or you watch these instructions, you know, of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, and you say, okay, when the, I get it, you know, when the children of Yisrael first came out of Egypt, they put blood on the door, and, angel of death passed over them, and then they didn't have time for the bread to rise, so they had their matzah, and they took that with them, and then they crossed the Red Sea, and now they were all children of Yisrael. They were free. They were adopted. They were the family now. And then 49 days later, seven sevens later, the Torah was given to Moshe, right?
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, so the suffering servant, I see, he's fulfilling Pesach, and matzah, his soul's in Sheol. And then the third day's right. His soul is meeting back up with the light. That's the Ruach. Okay, so now that's the firstborn. I get it. That's Bikurim. Or you could just walk through religiously designed edicts and not think about any of it. Which do you think Yahweh would prefer you did?
Definitely the former. That's what I would prefer, too. I've sat through a Passover meal that was done in the traditional Seder style, and I was bored out of my mind the entire time. No desire to ever do that.
Tell me about it. How did it work? I mean, I really don't know.
It wasn't even like entirely Jewish. It was one of the first years we did Passover. We went to my mother-in-law's, and my wife was talking about they had done it a few times as kids. But the way her mom did it was they had this book that basically took the Jewish Seder and gave it Christian meaning. But it's a lot of, you know, you say this, then you take a drink. You say this prayer, and then you can eat a bite. And then you say this prayer, and you can take a
bite. What did it teach you?
Mind-numbing.
What did it teach you?
I learned nothing. Learned
right.
How to say a prayer real fast so I can get to eating my food.
Well, I'm hearing you. I've never had to sit through one, and I thankfully never will. But I'm sitting here looking at the covenant, and you know this is in Yada Yada, and this is one of the things that really got me to pay attention to exactly who Yahweh is. And this is the covenant. This is really the covenant. You know, originally, before Abram, father who lifts up, became Abraham, this is what happened. He came to understand that Yahweh was the creator of the universe. And so what he did was fell on his face and said, "Oh mighty one," you know, "Oh mighty one." And he fell on his face and God spoke. And he said, "Look, here I am. Look at me. My berith, my familial covenant relationship is with you. A father to many enriched people from different races and places." And so, you know, what Craig wrote there is it's hard. You know, this is something you gotta love some of his thought processes, because a lot of this is easy to blow by until he really breaks it down. You know, it's hard to see up when you're looking down, which is why Yahweh's directions are the opposite of Catholic and Islamic prostrations. Right? I mean, that's the first thing he did was fell on his face. That's a funny way to put it, but it's the truth. It's the truth. And so then we look, right? He says, he's telling Abraham now. He's no longer Abram. He's telling Abraham, merciful and forgiving father. He's saying, he's talking about, you know, Sarah. I want to kneel down and favor her. She shall be a way to reach out to individuals from different races and places. An empowered and authorized family shall come to exist through her. Okay, now Sarah's listening to this. Sarah's was listening in the doorway in the tent behind them. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, you know, having traveled through many days. Sarah, his wife, was no longer able to be a source of life. So Sarah laughed inside. After I've become worn out and my husband is old, I am to experience pleasure, you know. And so Yahweh asked Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh at me? Shall I become pregnant and have a child now that I'm old?" And she says to him, "Pala, miracles?" Come from Yahweh's word? That's what she said. "Miracles, Yahweh? Come on now." And then Abraham fell on his face, and he laughed, saying to himself, "What's the purpose of a son being born to a 100-year-old man? and Sarah, how is a 90-year-old daughter going to conceive and bear a child? So, you know, Yahweh, who is incidentally the creator and the architect of life, made a prophetic promise to Abraham. And what did Abraham do? He doubled over laughing under his breath. And that's
now, what do you think would happen if someone did that to a lord?
They'd kill him.
Yeah. That'd be like instantly. But what did Yahweh do?
Well, he's named the first child laughter because obviously he enjoyed that. I think that's what the covenant's about. That's why I don't think there's laws and commands. I mean, there's parameters. I mean,
the first child of the covenant was named laughter. That tells you everything you really need to know.
Yeah, well, even that whole relaxed event, you know, when he came up and fell on his face when he didn't know him. He said, come on, man, get up. Look at me in the eye. You know, that you can't look at a guy in the eye unless you stand up. Look me in the eye. You know, and he always talks about his people being standing up, being upright. And he always talks about the people that are bowing, they're cursed. All of them, always.
And so, well, Larry, we've reached the end of the show about 8 minutes ago, so we might go ahead and, I think that's a really good way to end the show tonight, so might go ahead and wrap it up here.
Well, I agree with you.
Thanks for joining me. I was not looking forward to having to do this on my own, if you didn't call in.
No, you have to take call-ins when you do that, and there's always people willing to take call-ins and help. So, anyway, thanks, JB. I appreciate it. Thanks for setting it up or, you know, opening up the lines and everything.
I went ahead before the show today and scheduled the shows through to the end of the year so we don't have, like, what happened last week happen again.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, man. You were really bad. You were really bad, man.
I usually schedule's like 3-4 months out, but then I forget when it ends. So I went ahead this time and did it all the way through the end of the year. And so now I know that's a good marking point I can remember.
So yeah, well, we were hoping you would show up last week. I was going, well, I don't know. I'm going to try to I looked it up and said your show was scheduled to start for 6 hours. I was like, what? Then I looked again and it said 30 minutes. And I said, wow, that change was because Craig was in there messing around with it. Whatever had to be done. Yeah, exactly.
PCR
I appreciate
the way they do it, and it's a nightmare now to set up a show.
Oh, I believe you. I absolutely
used to be we had one set up. It was just every week this time. No, now you have to schedule it one episode at a time. So, but all right. Well, I'll talk to you next week and have a good Shabbat.
Yeah. Hey, you too. I enjoyed it. Thanks. Bye bye.
All right. Bye.